Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning author CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with fellow young adult author Ellen McGinty. Ellen McGinty is an author of young adult fiction, co-host of the Spinning Pen blog, and a working mom in Japan with three wild boys. Half her family is Texan, the cowboy variety, and the other half has lived in Asia for three generations. When not writing about brave adventures, she's often exploring the unbeaten road and drinking a matcha latte. Ellen is an experienced fiction copy editor and a member of the Christian Pen. She has several magazine publications through Calvary Chapel Magazine, including cover stories, and was selected for Pitch Slam 2016, Pitch to Publish 16, and Pitch Mass. She is also the author of The Water Child, a number one new release on Amazon. Ellen McGinty, welcome to the show.
Hi, CJ. Thank you so much for having me.
I am excited to have you here today, Ellen. We have, for our listeners, we have corresponded for over a year, and this is our first time actually getting to chat with one another because Ellen, as her bio says, lives in Japan, and I do not. So our time zone differences are definitely a factor here, but it's so fun to actually get to be able to have this conversation. And today we're going to be discussing Ellen's new fantasy novel, Saints and Monsters, which at the time of this episode airing, we'll have just released. So I am excited to dive into the story. Ellen, if you could you just share with us a little bit about your new book?
I'd love to. It's always a hard thing right on the spot, right? Tell me about your book. So Saints and Monsters is basically about a princess with disability who has to face a dragon to save her kingdom.
So exciting. And I think any book that adds dragons in it automatically makes it a more fun book because dragons are cool, right? That's great. So your first book is not this kind of fantasy, is it? Or are they like, does your first book have dragons or is this kind of a new genre for you?
Definitely new. So I'm calling it my debut YA fantasy novel. My first one was historical fiction about the 3/11 tsunami and earthquake in Japan.
Okay, so very different. And very different. Are you what inspired this story? Because it is so different from your first novel. So what kind of brought the story idea to life for you?
That's a great question. It's really two things. It's a duology and a botanist. So long story short, I had written a duology set in the same world. And I pitched it to a lot of different publishers. I had full requests from almost all of them, but it didn't gel for one reason or another. And then Quill and Flame saw it. And at the bottom of my proposal, I had the prequel. And Quill and Flame was the first one who said, I love the idea for this prequel. Like, I want that as a standalone. And I was so excited. Someone was really into this idea of a disabled princess and a dragon in Victorian Japan, is how I was labeling it. So that's kind of how Saints and Monsters started. And the botanist side is that I'm a total history nerd. So I was reading the diaries of Ernest Satow, who is a botanist and researcher in Japan in the 1880s. And his accounts are extremely factual, but there was one line about sea dragons pulling the emperor's boat.
Wow.
So I thought, what did he see? Like, was it really a sea dragon? Was it a whale? Like, why was it pulling the boat? He didn't say it was on the boat. So I thought this would be a really fun story idea. Like, what if there were dragons in Victorian era Japan? And what would that look like?
That is so fascinating, and it is a fun what-if question. I love those what-if questions that just unravel into a story and a world that you never imagined before that starts with this little line in a book. How wild. That's so cool.
It's so bizarre because he's actually in a museum here. They have like his original diaries you can go look at, which of course I have, and all of his facts are just accurate. And then there's this one random line about sea dragons. So
it does just make you wonder what in the world did he see?
Mm-hmm. What did he see? And then what would that look like in a fantasy story to have sea dragons in a historical Japan.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, what a fun idea. I love that. I love stories that have a little bit of historical feel to them as well. And it sounds like this is something that you love researching. So I'm sure your book has some nuggets of history from Victorian era Japan, does it?
It definitely does. I probably spent the same amount of research on this one as my historical fiction.
This is going to be the one that fantasy lovers can learn some history in, because I don't know that a lot of fantasy readers will necessarily go pick up a history novel. So this is a fun way to get them to learn history as well.
Right. Hopefully. I don't know how much history they will learn, because I've kind of snuck it into the story. And if you're familiar with Japanese history, you'll know what the connections are. But I imagine that a lot of the audience won't be quite so familiar.
That's kind of like a fun nugget Easter egg that somebody who knows will be able to find, and others might not see, but now maybe those listening will get curious about some Japanese history and want to discover what is true and what is fantasy in your world. What books or movies would you say are similar to this book, so that readers or listeners can know, okay, I liked this, so maybe I'll enjoy this book as well?
Oh, that's such a good question. That one is very hard, because I wrote this book because I wanted, there wasn't that movie out there and I wanted it. And so I wrote a book because it's kind of like The Last Samurai meets Studio Ghibli meets like Sleeping Beauty. It's this mesh of different things, which make it truly fun. But I haven't seen many stories like that.
Okay. And I think it's hard. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I've read as many set in Japan, in that Japanese Victorian era. I read them in maybe England or just different other parts of the world, but I think that that's also a bit of a unique twist as well. Am I right in thinking that?
I would think so. I think in Japan, we have, you know, books in that era that are quite, sure, you know, common here, but in English, I haven't seen quite so many. I think the closest would be like Six Crimson Cranes, but it's not the same time period. It is like a fantasy version of Japan, but probably an older time period than Victorian.
Well, I am excited to dive into that part of the story world in and of itself, because I love how books can give us glimpses at other cultures, into other cultures, and let us kind of walk around and see life in a different way. And obviously, Japan is your part of your heritage, something you love. You love living there, I would assume, because you still live there. And and you love the culture. And so I'm excited to be able to experience that through your book.
Yeah, it's really, I just love Japan. It's such a beautiful country. And yeah, I think I had a post on Instagram recently about how I just can't help but write about it. And so the history and culture just, you know, saturates the story. And that's one of the fun things for me about writing it, is that it's not like there's a bunch of Japanese words or anything in it. Like, you wouldn't know it's Japan per se. It's mostly fantasy, but there's these cultural elements under the surface that if you know what you're looking for, you can feel them and see them. Like really small things, like I remember one of my beta readers was like, why is it weird that that guy's walking? Like, maybe you could clarify that. That's kind of, you know, he's walking and eating. And I was like, oh, yes, we just don't do that. Yeah, or shrugging. Like, they don't really shrug. So if you have a character shrug, that's kind of not very Japanese. So things like that. Yeah, they're very subtle.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think that's what brings it to life in a lot of ways, because, you know, nobody likes to be preached at or lectured to through a story. And it's those little nuances that end up really sticking with us. And when we discover the deeper meanings behind them, like, oh, no one shrugs in Japan. I had no idea that that was the case. If I ever visit Japan, it's a good little fact to have in my brain, you know?
I mean, you can. People just don't. It's not like a normal reaction. Like, we nod a lot more, or just different things like that.
So in your book, is there a scene or a character that you really enjoyed writing and fell in love with?
A scene or a character. I really loved writing this character called Casimir, and his backstory was just so much fun to write. he's also in my duology. So I've probably spent the most time with this character. And I really enjoyed figuring him out more.
And I guess we probably can't ask too many questions about him without giving away spoilers. Is he early in the story? Does he come up later in the
He's very early in the story. And my beta readers were quite mixed on him. Some just absolutely adore him and some do not like him. And so he's just a very fascinating, dividing character. And that's what makes him so fun. Like, I would describe him as morally gray, but he also has a strong moral compass. So he's very interesting and dynamic. That's all I can say.
Oh, I am excited to dive in and discover more about this character. I always like to hear what an author enjoyed writing and who spoke to that author's heart in some ways as they were crafting their story and their backstory and the person they really enjoyed spending time with in writing the book. Because I think when I go and read the book at that point, sometimes these characters pop out at me in a new way, because now I know that this character meant something to you. So I'm curious to follow him or her, depending on the author, through the story.
Right. He was definitely the most fun to write, but I wouldn't want to spend time with him. Like,
Okay. Gotcha. No going out for a cup of tea with him.
Right. I'd rather spend time with other characters.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool. So one of the things I love to talk about in this podcast, and as you probably already know, and many of our listeners know, is the deeper themes within the book. So in Saints and Monsters, are there any themes that you discovered while you were writing the book, or even that you wanted to see flow through the story when you started writing it?
I would say definitely. The theme of self-worth was there from the very beginning of this story. And there's one line in the book that goes something like, it's very strong to be fragile and beautiful and unafraid. Mm. And it's just this idea that I think in modern books, there's a lot of, you know, female leads who are really strong. They win the day. They save their own fights. You know, they're the strong, you know, female lead. But there's also this thing of sometimes we can't win our battles. Like, sometimes we don't have the strength, especially if we struggle with things like autoimmune issues or disabilities or other things. We don't have that physical strength to be the warrior princess. So where is that worth? You know, and I really wanted to explore that idea with a character who was struggling with self-worth and the idea that they could be fragile and that it's okay.
That's so powerful. Mm-hmm. I love it, because I think it's fun to have that strong female lead, and it's so popular in our modern culture, in our books, in our movies, in our TV shows. And yet, like you said, if you have an autoimmune disease or if you have a disability, that can just feel like, oh, I'll never achieve any worth or value because I can't be that person. I can't be that strong female lead. And even those strong female leads, the people who can be that, they still have weaknesses. We all do. And we all struggle with self-worth and understanding our value. And there's always something we can look at ourselves and be critical of. And so I really love that you're exploring that theme in your book, and also the beauty that can come even in weakness, which I think is something that we don't always see. But weakness can bring humility, because we recognize that we can't do it all and we need other people and we need there to be something beyond ourselves in order to accomplish a goal or to move forward in different situations.
Exactly. And it can bring a different kind of strength too. And that was another aspect of it that I wanted to explore, was that it's not only like when we are weak and have disabilities and things like that, but also, you know, just everyone has things thrown at them in life. And sometimes it's very hard to overcome those things, or we don't feel like we can in our own strength. Mm-hmm. And, you know, character agency, having the character do things to impact the plot, is so important. But at the same time, characters, people, we need friends, we need other people to help us. And I think that's one of the things that can kind of get put in the cracks in fiction sometimes, is that needing other people. And also that when we are in those hard places and we can't physically overcome, that we can mentally and spiritually overcome, like that our choices can be victorious So,
yes. Yes, I love that and resonate so much with it, because I think one of the things missing in our strong female lead stories is the value and importance of community and mm-hmm. others, and recognizing that we, like you said, we can't do it alone. We need something outside of ourselves. And I love how God even says throughout the Bible, like, that in our weakness, his strength is made perfect. And like you said, mm-hmm. like, spiritually and mentally, sometimes we need to just own our weakness and mm-hmm. be like, okay, I can't, but I'm going to still make the right choice here. I'm going to still choose to mm-hmm. obey God, or to, you know, rely on him in my weakness. And that is a strength that ends up being in our character, that shines through in a way that I believe is more powerful than we realize when we first make that decision to actually take that step.
Yeah, that is so good how you phrase that. It's more powerful than we realize. And, you know, for the characters too, for us, it's like, we don't think about it in the moment how powerful it is when we make those choices. And then after we choose that, whether it's choosing to align our feelings with God's word, or if it's choosing just to do the next right thing, or whatever it is, that choice, afterwards we get to see the fruit of it. But maybe not in the moment. It could feel like we're losing the battle because physically we've lost it, or, you know, an event has occurred and, you know, it's been devastating. But those little choices do add up, and that's powerful. So
I love it, because I feel weak more times than I feel strong personally. So I think that there's something in that I've seen of God's grace. And even just when I'm willing to acknowledge my weakness and allow others to be a part of my life and to help me and to encourage me, because sometimes mm-hmm. we can feel like I need to be so strong that I can't be helped, or I can't be encouraged, and I can't let other people come alongside of me. But then we end up isolated and feeling far more lonely than we ever would have before. And when we can instead allow ourselves to even feel that weakness and be like, okay, I do need other people. I do need the strength that this person has, or the wisdom that that person mm-hmm. has, or I need this other person's encouragement, without just saying, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. It's when we can humbly open ourselves up to that we realize the strength and power that comes in community and in other people being around us and helping us on this journey that is life, because we really can't do it alone.
Amen. It's the journey of life. Like, it happens to us all. Like, I don't think there's a single person out there who hasn't faced weakness internally and externally. You know, it's just life. And one of the hardest things, like you said, is facing that weakness and being okay with it not being okay. Like, that's a scary place to be, where you have to face it and accept it.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. And I'm excited to watch you explore that through your book. And so this sounds like a theme that was on your heart, and you were mm-hmm. like ready to pour that into the story. As you did that, did you discover it in deeper ways yourself? Was it something that kind of came alive to you in new ways that maybe you didn't expect when you started?
It definitely was. I remember getting to like 3/4 of the way through the book and thinking, how am I going to fix this? Because I don't know the answer. Like, I don't have the answer to these self-worth questions my character is asking and the problem she's facing right now. And I had to do some real digging. And I actually was reading a lot of different books on the subject, and I didn't find my answer in books. But I found it in just sitting in the quiet and asking myself those same questions I was asking the character, and being okay with that place of weakness, right? And I realized one of the questions, especially for people with disabilities, and I have autoimmune issues that I mirrored after, like, my character has a fantasy autoimmune issue, similar to mine, but different. And one of those was that if that weakness was taken away, would I still be of worth? Like, would I be enough? Like, is it the weakness that's the problem, or is it me? And undoing these layers like an onion, you know, on my character, and just really getting to the core of worth. And of course, the dragons came into that. And it was really fun to unwind that theme.
I can imagine. And unwinding the theme. And then I love how you just casually threw in, and the dragons came into that. Like, this is how you know you're talking to a fantasy author, folks.
The dragons are so much fun. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Well, dragons are a fun element to any story. As I said, I think stories just become so cool when you add a dragon.
I know. I wish I could tell you more, but it would be so much spoilers. So yes. I must hold my tongue.
But it's enough to get, I know, for me, excited, and I'm sure the listeners. And when this airs, the book will be available so they can dive in right after this interview and discover all the things and then message you and talk about it then, because it won't be spoilery.
Right.
When you, speaking of your book being out and in the hands of readers, which is a very exciting thing to consider, when your readers close the book, what's something you hope they take with them, and how even this theme or just something in your story that you hope they can just take with them into their life after this?
I think definitely the theme of self-worth, and that they are worthwhile, that they have intrinsic worth, and that they can see that in others too. Like, I think a lot of times we focus on ourselves, like self-worth, you know, even that word.
Sure.
But just seeing the worth in every human being.
That's so powerful, and something that, like you said, it is easy to just focus on ourselves. Mm-hmm. But then I think we can learn it more when we start looking outside of ourselves too, don't you? Like, when I can see and recognize in another person the value, and, you know, we're all created in the image of God. God's given each and every one of us something to reflect him and his character. And there is something of value and worth in every single person. And when we can start to see that in others, I think we can then start to realize, oh, well, if this is true of other people, then it's true of me too, that God, he didn't mm-hmm. just stop that when he got to me, you know, he put something of worth and value in me as well. So, yeah,
exactly. Like finding the gold in others, you know, and having like a curious heart when you're looking at other people, like what's their story, and, you know, trying to find that gold and see their worth. And I hope that's what readers can take away from it, is just this curious heart about other people and seeing that worth. And that's part of Japanese story too. There's a lot of redeemable characters in Japanese story. It's not always so clear black and white, but in a good way, not in the kind of, I think we've seen some of the toxic side of that in some YA stories, but this is more of how everyone has strengths and weaknesses. Everyone has sin. Everyone has good, that they have choices that they can make, and how to call out what is good, you know?
Yes. No, I'm so resonating with what you're saying. And also, aren't the people who are looking for the gold in others, who can see the good in other people, aren't they the most enjoyable people to be around? I know the people in my life who are just ready to call out good things in other people and be, you know, see that, they're the people that you kind of want to hang out with, because they're not all about themselves. And they're also, you know, ready to see how somebody has value and worth, and then brings it out of just a self-focused doldrum that can happen and opens it up to a bigger, more beautiful picture of other people. And still recognizing that there's sin, that there's, like you said, that we all have failings. We all mess up. We all do that. But in it, God can still redeem those people. He can still work, and there can still be good that comes out of even the worst places and situations.
Absolutely.
So as we kind of move into our final third of our interview here, I always like to kind of turn the tables and talk about you as the author. So can you tell us what started you on your author journey?
Okay. So I feel like a lot of authors have this story, but I've been writing forever. It's true. I started when I was like in kindergarten, and I was making my own graphic novels, like manga. Yeah, in America. I don't know why. And I was stapling them together and selling them at a lemonade stand for a penny.
No way. That is so fun.
Yes. I don't know. I think I probably only sold a few copies. I mean, I don't know. But that was like a dream I had even as a little kid. And then, of course, life happened, and I was told, you'll never make money as an author. It's not a real job. Don't write. And so I just didn't. I gave it up. It wasn't until later, when I graduated college, actually, that I started to write again. And I fell back in love with it. I started reading YA. Before that, I wasn't reading young adult books. I was reading just classical books, history books, and then different adult books. But I started reading YA and fell in love with the genre. And then I had a group from the Society of Children Book Writers who met every week, and we started critiquing each other's pages. And it was a group of authors who were well published. Like they had, you know, 10 to 30 titles in between them. And they just took me under their wing. Like I knew nothing. And they just loved on me and taught me how to write. And so that's really where it began, was with that group.
I think one of the neatest things about being an author is how you can be an author in community. Kind of mm-hmm. back to what we've talked about, how we can't do it alone. Anytime someone asks me for my biggest piece of advice on being an author, the first thing I say is that you can't do it alone. And it feels like when you look at it, it's such a solitary journey because what we sit at our computers and we type away and write all these words, but it's not, it shouldn't be solitary. We need other people because otherwise it's a long and lonely process. But if you have other people encouraging you and helping you and giving you good advice along the way and just being there on the days when it's rough that you can just message and be like, I don't think I'm a good writer. And they can talk you off that edge, you know, of the cliff,
right?
All of that. It makes such a difference. It really does. Mm-hmm. So that's so neat that they were a huge part in bringing you to where you are now.
Yeah, they were wonderful. I grew so much in that group.
I can imagine. So when you're not crafting your epic stories with dragons and or historical fun facts and diving into the history of different places and times, what do you like to do with your time?
I love exploring Japan. So I absolutely love exploring all the different prefectures, the mountains, the historic villages. Give me any obscure, like off the beaten path, and I am there. And then I love kimono as well. I've become obsessed with kimono this year. So
can you explain for us what kimono is? Because I don't know fully, and I'm sure our listeners don't all know either. So,
yeah, so kimono just means thing you wear. So it's basically like traditional Japanese clothing as opposed to Western clothing. And there's an actual style, like how you wear it. It's called kitsuke. And then there's different types of obis, which is like the wrap that goes around you. And they have different meanings, different occasions that you wear them on. Then every kimono also has different patterns, fabrics, and they each have meanings. It's really, really fun diving into history.
That's so neat. Well, and you sometimes you wear your kimonos on your Insta. You like to post pictures of them on Instagram and stuff as well, right?
Yeah, I love it. It takes a lot of boldness. Like I've had to get out of my little hobbit introvert self to put on a kimono and go to town because people look at you. If you're Japanese and wear a kimono, you will get looks because it's just not that common nowadays unless you're in a tourist hotspot. But I like to go to the off the beaten path places. So you definitely draw attention to yourself.
Wow. But if any listeners want to see any examples of this, they can go to your Instagram and some pictures. And yeah.
Absolutely. And I try to be as authentic as possible and point out when I do something wrong too, and like how I learned from that in the kimono dressing process and just the tidbits that I'm learning, like how to dress and things like that.
That's so neat. Wow. Well, we are unfortunately coming to the end of our time here, and this has been so much fun. I've loved getting to have the conversation with you. But before we go, we already mentioned Instagram, but could you just let listeners know where they can connect with you and find your book and all of that?
Absolutely. You can find my book on Amazon and then anywhere books are sold, basically. So Barnes & Noble, the Kobo, all the different things. You can also find me on Instagram, on Twitter, although I'm not on there very often anymore, and Facebook.
That's perfect. So I will also have links to all of that in the show notes so listeners can just go right and find you and connect with you and see all of your posts on Instagram, connect with you on your website and everything as well, and find Saints and Monsters, which is available wherever books are sold now. So thank you, Ellen McGinty, so much for being on Read Clean YA with CJ. It was a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so much fun.
I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with Ellen McGinty. I so enjoyed getting to know her and hear more about her newest book. If you're looking for a fantasy adventure with an enemies-to-lovers romance set in a fantasy Victorian-era Japan with dragons, then Saints and Monsters is the book for you. I wanted this episode to come out the week Saints and Monsters released, so I am still reading the book and not quite finished it yet, but I am loving the story. I will say that I don't have a note for young or sensitive readers today because I'm not finished, but there is romance in the story as well as some violence, though nothing graphic. All of that being said, I've heard from trusted sources that this book is a great fit for you, my amazing listeners. So if it sounds like your type of story, feel free to dive right in. Next time on Read Clean YA with CJ, I'll be talking with young adult author L.E. Richmond, author of The Mermaid's Tale. This is a fun conversation about an excellent story, so I hope you tune in. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult books too.